recently a young husband named Bobby Wesson posted on Facebook a loving tribute to his wife, Rayena. And in that post, Bobby speaks of his love for her, his admiration for her as a wife and as a wonderful mother to their child, and also as a hardworking nurse at the local hospital. And Bobby ends this tribute saying that his wife, Rayena, is his hero. Well, the post went viral. Within a few days, his Facebook post collected 160,000 shares, 700,000 likes, and 40,000 comments from all around the world. And all of this online attention did cause a slight problem for Bobby. Many of those 40,000 comments were what he called very interesting private messages sent to him from female admirers. And so he went on Facebook again to post a message of his own. It's a short 30-second video of him sitting up in bed and looking into his cell phone camera and saying, "I've made this video to send a message to the rash of women who've been sending me messages on social media. Please don't. I'm married, I have a baby, and I have a wife who I love very much. She's so good to me, and I'd never do anything to betray her. In fact, I don't even look at those messages." And then he looks off camera and he asks, "Was that good?" And the camera turns a little to the right, and where his wife is jokingly holding a kitchen knife to his neck. And then she gives him a kiss on the cheek and says, "That was good. You did good, baby." Well, it seems to me that that couple has a pretty good marriage. There's love, there's mutual admiration, there's a fierce loyalty, and also a good sense of humor. All important ingredients for a good marriage. You know, over the last 17 years, especially the earlier years of my ministry, I've had the opportunity to conduct weddings for a lot of young couples. And each of those couples, when I first met them and led them through some premarital counseling, each of them had this joyful anticipation of having not only a good marriage, but a great marriage. Having the kind of friendship that brings out the best in each other, the kind of bond that would allow the two of them to face any kind of adversity together, the kind of union that actually produces something greater than the sum of its parts. The kind of marriage that others would look at and say, "Oh Lord, give me a relationship like that." And this is what, of course, they're all looking forward to. Maybe you have been blessed with a union like that. Or maybe you long for a marriage like that. Again, maybe you haven't really thought about it all that much. Maybe you're not married, or maybe not even all that interested. But whatever your situation, there's something valuable to be learned here from the couple that we meet in this Christmas story today. Maybe it's something that can make a difference for you right now, or maybe it'll be later on. Or perhaps we can learn something here from Mary and Joseph that will help us to speak wisdom into the lives of our kids or others. Now, we don't know exactly what hopes and dreams Mary and Joseph had here when they were first engaged to be married. At the point that we meet them here, they're in that betrothal stage here, where in their culture they were already considered to be married, except they didn't yet live together or have sexual relations. And we don't know what their dreams were, but we can assume they were both looking forward to a happy and fulfilling life together once their formal marriage ceremony had taken place. But what we do know is when we meet them here in Matthew's gospel, things seem to be going very wrong. And that's the first thing that Mary and Joseph have to teach us, that things do go wrong in marriage. And as hard as it is to face it, it's really important. It's a really important thing to admit it when things are looking bad. Look at the text. It says, this is how the birth of Jesus Christ came about, Matthew 1:18. His mother Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, that is, before they had sexual relations, she was found to be with child. Now, for a marriage, things don't often look much badder than that. I mean, what could look worse than in a marriage than the appearance of infidelity? Now, in most, if not all, cases of extramarital affairs, it's usually the end result of a relationship that's already been going bad for a while. Usually things go from bad to worse by little steps, rather than all of a sudden. You know, it's scary to think by what little steps a marriage can start to break down. Humorist Dave Barry shares a lighthearted look at this in regard to Christmas time. He says, by mid-December, the average husband has bought zero gifts. And in fact, he hasn't actually gotten around to getting an acceptable gift for his wife for last Christmas. He did give her something last year, of course, but he could tell by her reaction she was not dreaming about getting an auto emergency kit. Even though it was the deluxe model with booster cables and an air compressor and everything. Well, apparently this gift violated an important rule. But the guy has no idea what the rule is, and his wife is too upset to tell him. But you wonder how a little step or a misstep like that could figure into the collapse of a whole marriage. Now, I've sat and prayed with couples who were going through marital problems and noticed that it has often started with just little insensitivities, little steps of injury and disrespect, each of them so small it hardly seemed worth talking about, but each significant enough to create just one more tiny layer of scar tissue over the human heart. The romance may have grown with big steps at the beginning, but then it died by little steps, little degrees of hurt and thoughtlessness along the way, which just accumulate and grow worse. And then, you know, complaining about certain behaviors, which moves on to criticizing the other's intentions, and finally to condemning their worth and their character. And so couples can become defensive and then become distant, and eventually just kind of shut down. Marriage may continue, they may go through the motions, but they're no longer true friends, they're no longer the best thing that ever happened to each other. And in those cases, sometimes it's tempting just to carry on and do nothing about the situation. But for Mary and Joseph, their problem was obviously growing bigger and bigger each month, and they couldn't hide it. Joseph probably thought, Mary, this is all your fault. Mary probably thought, Joseph, you just don't understand. This situation's a lot bigger than me. But sooner or later, they both had to admit that it was something about the original hopes and dreams they had changed. And, you know, couples today need to face the reality of what's happening in their marriages. Hopefully it's a lot of good things. But if it's not, if the romance has died or it's dying by little degrees, it's important, first of all, to admit it, to face it. And that's the first valuable thing we can learn about marriage from this Christmas story here. We've got to admit it when it's gone bad or it's going badly. The second valuable thing from this Christmas story, though, is when it's gone from better to worse, or it's heading that way, is that we still have options. We still have options. Like Joseph did here, you know, we have to consider our options. That's what Joseph did. He considered things here. It says that Joseph was considering divorce. And one of his options here was to divorce loudly, as many people do. After all, nobody in that little town in Nazareth would blame Joseph if he chose to do that, just very publicly separate from his betrothed spouse who had obviously been unfaithful to him. Matthew 5 tells us even God allows for divorce under those conditions. Joseph could have said to Mary, well, okay, you've done your thing, you've hurt and embarrassed me. Now you're going to feel the pain and disgrace like I have. Mary could have said to Joseph, well, Joseph, you never could handle the truth. You never listen. You always think it's all about you. Never look at the big picture. Go if you want to, but I'm going to tell people what you're really like. Now we know this kind of thing happens. There's always the option to divorce loudly. Well, another option is to divorce quietly. It takes a little more character to do that. Verse 19 says, because Joseph, her husband, was a righteous man, that is, he was a man of character. He had a good reputation in the community as a godly man. And because he was a godly person, it says, he did not want to expose her to public disgrace. And he had in mind to divorce her quietly. And you know, some couples go that route. They say to each other, well, look, this just hasn't worked. We've tried and it just didn't work out. So let's not tear each other apart here. Let's just part quietly. You know, you take the house in Nazareth, I'll take the donkey, and you can have the child on weekends. Let's just divorce quietly. And that's sometimes the way it goes. Or there's the option to divorce secretly. This is the invisible divorce. It's not that apparent on the outside. Someone said, some couples hold hands because they're madly in love with each other, and some couples hold hands because if they let go, they'll kill each other. Well, Mary and Joseph could just shut down the relationship and keep up the appearances. After all, they had family to think of, they had social connections to maintain. Maybe just keep the shell of the marriage alive, and even though it had died on the inside. Some couples give up on having a real marriage and they stay together but just go through the motions. Now, I'm not saying all this to make any of us feel bad about our failures or mistakes in marriage. It's actually to point out from this story that we have a God of second chances and new beginnings. That He's a God of restored relationships and of fresh starts. And so this story shows that when things are going badly, first of all, we have to admit it. Secondly, we do have some options. But thirdly, there's a most important and wonderful reality here. See, when we come to the end of our dreams, God is there to give us His dream. It says that after Joseph had considered his options here, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream. And the Greek word here for angel is angelos. It literally means a messenger. A messenger of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid. And you know, so much of the breakdown in our lives has to do with fear. Don't be afraid, says the angel. Take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you, Joseph has a part to play in this. You are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. So Joseph is being told here that the very circumstances that he fears now mean the death of his relationship to Mary are actually the beginning of salvation. In the seemingly hopeless situation, God is doing something new. So could it be that when we find ourselves in a place where our dreams have died, and where our circumstances are full of the death of things as we wanted them to be, that maybe we have not understood that maybe this is where we had to come to, for God to create a new beginning to save us. So what today may look like a dead end or a closed door will become, if you lean into it, a bridge to a whole new season of blessing. We have a God of second chances and new beginnings. So what's needed right now, and this is what God's telling Joseph here, is fresh faith and courageous obedience. You know, against all of his natural inclinations to save himself here, Joseph will now have to trust God and just step out in faith. He'll need to let his dreams die and believe in God's dream. So, what does that look like in practice for you and me? Well, sometimes it means going before God to pray for your marriage. Always a good thing to do. But have you ever asked God to show you his dream for your marriage? What did God have in mind when he brought you together? Have you ever prayed, Lord, tell me again why you brought us two together? Help me to see the purpose again. Help me to see again my spouse is the best thing that ever happened to me. Even pray together that God would do something new and fresh in your marriage. It doesn't matter how long you've been married. God can do something new and fresh. For some couples, acting in faith and obedience may mean getting some help, going to see a messenger, or getting some counseling. Sometimes that's needed. Sometimes faith and obedience may just mean learning a little more, reading through a marriage-building book together, something like that. It doesn't really matter how long you've been married, but you know, it doesn't matter even if you have a great marriage. And it's still good to further your learning, to go a little deeper. In fact, a part of what led to this message today for me was I started reading a book on marriage, and I haven't done that for a long time. Unfortunately, it was Tim Keller's book on, it's called The Meaning of Marriage, fairly recent book, and it's a study of Ephesians 5, that passage where Paul talks about man and woman, the husband and wife coming together, and God's vision for that. And I've been married for 41 years, and it's showing me I still have a lot to learn, a lot to grow in, a few things to change. Helping me, though, to see more of God's dream for my marriage. Well, it was at Christmas time one year that a guy named Slats Grobnik was selling Christmas trees in a vacant city lot. But he tells a time when a young couple came there looking for a tree to take home. And this couple kind of looked like they were in the lower income bracket there. Their clothes were kind of worn and ragged, and they obviously didn't have much. And so Grobnik showed them around his lot and all the rows of cut trees, but they said they were all too expensive for them. So then he had an idea, and he thought, well, I got a few trees in the back here that aren't very good. You know, it's kind of, I pulled them out, and they're not very good, but you could get one of those for cheap. And, you know, they were those kind of trees where they're okay on one side, but the other side's pretty bare. We've all had those. So this couple went to look at them, and they chose one, but then they asked if they could have a second one. Both trees were full on one side and kind of Charlie Brown scraggly on the other. And so he gave them both trees. Well, a couple of days later, Grobnik was walking along the street by some apartments not far from his Christmas tree lot, and he noticed in the front window of a ground floor apartment an absolutely beautiful Christmas tree. And it was full and it was thick, and he wondered if it had been one of the nicer ones from his lot. And then he was shocked as he saw in the window this same young couple to whom he'd sold those two lousy trees. And so his curiosity got the better of him, and he went over and he knocked on the door, and he just had to know where they got that beautiful tree. And so they told him how they'd come home with what they'd had and how they'd worked those two trees together where the branches were kind of thin. They told him how hard it was to get those branches all interlaced and how they used wire to bind the two trees together. But with some time and with some effort and the grace of God, that they found a way to overlap those branches so that they were now so thick and full you couldn't even see the wires. So that's the secret, said Grobnik. You take two trees that aren't perfect, that have all kinds of flaws and deficiencies, but if you put them together just right, I would say with faith and obedience, sometimes you can make something really beautiful. So do you think it's possible that God could do that with a man and woman who are willing by faith and obedience to be worked into the dream of God? I think it is. It's not just about a man and a wife. It's about a man and a wife and God. Yeah. The Gospels actually speak of a time when it happened to two real people. Mary said, "Lord, let it be unto me as it is said in your word." And Matthew says that when Joseph woke up, he did what the angel of the Lord had commanded him and took Mary home as his wife. But he had no union with her until she gave birth to a son, and he gave him the name Jesus. Jesus, the name of the Savior who still takes imperfect people and with grace and truth binds them together to make something truly beautiful, fully and finally one. May it be so for our marriages too. God bless.